WWE second quarter earnings. We have just a few announcements before we begin. To ask a question verbally, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press star two. Today's call is being recorded. I'll now turn the call over to Michael Weitz, SVP, Financial Planning and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to WWE's second quarter 2019 earnings conference call. Leading today's discussion are Vince McMahon, our Chairman and CEO, as well as George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, our co-presidents. Their remarks will be followed by a Q&A session. We issued our earnings release earlier this morning and have posted the release, our earnings presentation, and other supporting materials on our website, corporate.wwe.com/investors. Today's discussion will include forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements reflect our current views, are based on various assumptions, and are subject to risks and uncertainties disclosed in our SEC filings. Actual results may differ materially, and undue reliance should not be placed on them. Additionally, the matters we will be discussing today may mention of non-GAAP to GAAP information is set forth in our earnings release and presentation, which are available on our website. Finally, as a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded, and the replay will be available on our website later today. At this time, it's my privilege to turn the call over to Vince.
Good morning, everyone. As you know, our revenue is $269 million. That is what it is. We have completed our content distribution agreements in BT Sport in the U.K., Latin America, Fox Sports, and in China, PP Sports. We're excited about that, excited we can influence, or they can influence as well, the ability to do localized content in addition to enhance the content that they currently have in a more in-depth capacity. Pardon me. It's another way and a deeper way of reaching our audience and a new audience as well. Obviously, there's India and MENA to do, and we are going to be close to announcing those deals very soon. There's improvement with the key metrics over the quarter with television ratings, live event, and digital consumption. One of the things that we've done is hire two executive directors, one for Raw, one for SmackDown. In doing so, it allows me to look at a longer-range story arc standpoint and also spend more time on talent development and not get into the weeds as much as I've had to do in the past. That is a really, really good thing for long-term as well as short-term. Actually, we've seen a big result already. In addition to that, we're excited about our future, particularly on Fox. First week in October when we debut there, it's really going to be awesome. As you know, Fox broadcast reaches about 33% more homes than where we are with USA. We're anxious to, and great promoters. It's more of a, notwithstanding public companies, but it's more of a family-type situation in which we do very well in, notwithstanding our relationship, again, with NBCU, which is a deeper relationship as well. In any event, we're really excited about our future in terms of where we're just almost like another kickoff for us. That's about all I have to say, George.
Thanks, Vince. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today for a review of our Q2 financial performance, our progress on key strategic initiatives, and our business outlook. During the quarter, we achieved adjusted OIBDA of $34.6 million, which exceeded our guidance primarily due to enhanced revenue recognized in conjunction with our recent event in Saudi Arabia. That enhanced revenue is expected to reverse in connection with an anticipated fourth quarter event in that country. To attain our second quarter financial results, we made important progress on key strategic initiatives. As Vince mentioned, we completed content distribution agreements in the U.K., Latin America, and China. We prepared for the next phase of our WWE Network, which initiated just yesterday, and we achieved improvement in our engagement metrics since April. As a reminder, in our first quarter earnings call, we discussed our belief that our metrics were negatively impacted by the absence of several talent. I'd like to provide an update on these important measures before discussing our content distribution or the evolution of WWE Network. As shown on page 3 of the presentation, domestic TV ratings for Raw, which declined 14% in the first quarter of 2019, improved to a year-over-year decline of 11% in June, and that occurred despite a tough comparison to Game 5 of the NBA Championship on June 10. Similarly, domestic TV ratings for SmackDown, which declined 13% in the first quarter, improved to a 7% decline in June, matching the aggregate ratings performance of the top 25 cable networks. In addition, domestic TV ratings for Raw and SmackDown showed steady improvement throughout the quarter from April to June, with June showing the best performance. You should also note that Raw's TV ratings for the first 4 weeks in July through July 22nd reflect an increase of 1% year over year. And this includes the ratings for the Raw reunion special this past Monday, which were up 15% on a year-over-year basis. For the same four-week period in July, SmackDown's TV ratings improved to a 2% year-over-year decline. Consumption of WWE content across digital platforms, as measured by the number of views, rose from a year-over-year increase of 15% in the first quarter to growth of 38%. Finally, average attendance at the company's live events in North America, which declined 12% in the first quarter, improved to a decline of 4% in June, and was down 2% for the second quarter. We believe these favorable developments stem from the return of our talent, as well as the emergence of new storylines and superstars following a successful WrestleMania. As we emphasized last quarter, we remain very excited about the debut of SmackDown Live on Fox on October 4th, which marks the first time that WWE will be available live 52 weeks a year on one of the four premier broadcast platforms. In terms of our financial performance, adjusted OIBDA declined approximately $9 million based on lower revenue from our media and live event businesses, the impact of strategic investments to support our content creation, digitization, and localization strategies. To discuss our business performance in the quarter, let's turn to page 5 of the presentation, which shows revenue, operating income, and adjusted OIBDA contribution by segment as compared to the prior year. Looking at our media segment, adjusted OIBDA declined $7 million as the escalation of core content rights fees was offset by a reduction in network subscription revenue and the impact of the aforementioned investments. The timing of original series, that is, fewer episodes delivered for programs such as Total Bellas, contributed to a decline in media revenue but had a limited impact on the change in profits. WWE Network's average paid subscribers decreased 6% to approximately 1.69 million for the second quarter, and we projected an 8% decline for the third quarter. Given this trend, we no longer expect to achieve record subscribers for 2019. As we look ahead, our primary focus for WWE Network is its continued evolution. Late last night, we initiated the transition of WWE Network to a new platform created and delivered in partnership with Endeavor Streaming and Massive Interactive. The new platform provides subscribers with a better user experience, more intuitive user interface, and much better discovery and search. More importantly, this new platform enables the introduction of new features that we've discussed previously and experiences over time, including the addition of a free tier, a premium tier, and the localization of the network into multiple languages. So we remain very excited about the long-term opportunity of WWE Network.
During the quarter, we also made progress on other critical strategic initiatives, including our content distribution plans in key international markets. As both Vince and George mentioned, we completed content licensing agreements with BT Sport in the UK, Fox Sports in Latin America, and PP Sports in China. We believe these partners provide both Raw and SmackDown with strong distribution to reach both current and new WWE fan households. While producing the two highest rated programs on USA Network, Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live, we also continue to produce and develop other new original programs across platforms. On television, we launched a new season of Miz and Mrs. on USA Network earlier this week, and we renewed Total Bellas for a fifth season on E! On our direct-to-consumer network, we added more than 90 hours of original content, including live in-ring specials such as The Shield's Final Chapter and new talent documentaries such as WWE 24, The Year of Ronda Rousey. For social and digital platforms, we created over 200 hours of content, including our Up, Up, Down, Down YouTube feature of WWE superstar Xavier Woods at E3. We also are developing a new unscripted series entitled Fight Like a Girl for the mobile-first platform Quibi, and a live-action family movie entitled The Main Event to premiere on Netflix in 2020. These new shows build upon the plans we previously discussed for a weekly studio show on Fox Sports 1, which will debut this fall, and we're also producing documentaries on our WWE Legends under the A&E Biography banner, which will premiere in the first quarter of 2020. Turning to our live event business, as shown on page 7 of our presentation, adjusted OIBDA from our live events declined $1.5 million, primarily due to lower revenue from our international events. Outside North America, lower ticket sales reflected the staging of 6 fewer events and weaker performance as average attendance declined 14% to 4,900. During the quarter, we continued to successfully stage large-scale events for our fans, including WrestleMania, which attracted more than 82,000 fans to a sold-out MetLife Stadium, and Super Showdown in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. To further develop our diverse talent base that supports such events, we held our largest ever talent tryout in China last week, which featured 40 participants. And finally, we announced that we would perform in China for a fourth straight year with an event in Shanghai at the Mercedes-Benz Arena this September. In our consumer product segment, adjusted OIBDA declined slightly based on a $3.6 million reduction in revenue from the prior year quarter, primarily due to lower sales of merchandise on WWE Shop and lower royalties from the sale of toy products. As a key initiative of our consumer products business, we continue to expand our mobile game portfolio with the launch of WWE Universe. The game was developed in partnership with Glu Mobile, a marquee publisher known for its popular Tap Sports baseball game franchise. As we launch the game, we continue to increase the penetration of our mobile games. At quarter end, we had nearly 115 million installs across our entire mobile game portfolio. Additionally, in collaboration with Mattel, we secured premium merchandising space at Walmart and supported that placement with retailtainment activities in 1,300 stores over a four-week span.
On page 9 of our presentation, it shows selected elements of our capital structure. As of June 30th, 2019, WWE held approximately $296 million in cash and short-term investments, and we estimate that we have approximately $200 million in debt capacity under our revolving credit agreement. In the quarter, we had negative free cash flow of $27.5 million as compared to $66.4 million in the prior year. The change was predominantly due to the timing impact of our recent event in Saudi Arabia on working capital. This year's event was held in June, and last year's event was held earlier in the quarter in April. To a lesser extent, the change in free cash flow also reflected a $12.1 million increase in capital expenditures, the majority of which was related to the execution of our workplace plan and lower operating performance. For the third quarter 2019, we estimate adjusted OIBDA of $17 million to $22 million. This range of results represents a year-over-year decline in adjusted OIBDA primarily due to increased fixed costs, including the impact of strategic investments, as well as lower WWE Network revenue, which more than offset the escalation of core content rights fees. For the full year, we continue to target record revenue of approximately $1 billion and adjusted OIBDA of at least $200 million. This guidance assumes continued improvement in our engagement metrics, a second large-scale event in the MENA region, and the completion of a media rights deal in the MENA region. We believe we have agreements in principle with the Saudi General Sports Authority on the broad terms for the latter two items. However, this understanding is non-binding. It is possible that either or both of these business developments do not occur on expected terms and or that engagement does not improve as assumed. We've evaluated these potential outcomes and currently believe that most likely downside to our adjusted OIBDA would be approximately $10 million to $20 million below our current outlook. Our full-year guidance reflects strong fourth-quarter results, substantial revenue growth from both our new content distribution agreements in the U.S., which become effective in that period, and the aforementioned media rights deal in the MENA region. As you know, we're in the process of finalizing our distribution plans for Raw and SmackDown in two international markets, India and the Middle East. As we stated in our last earnings call, we expect to finalize these plans later this year. And once we have added visibility for 2020 and the rest of our business, we'll provide additional perspective on our long-term strategy, key initiatives, 2020 financial performance, and a longer-term business outlook. We believe, in the context of the ongoing media industry trends, that we are well-positioned to leverage our focus on content, digitization, and globalization to drive long-term growth and shareholder value. That concludes this portion of our call, and I'll now turn it back to Michael.
Thank you, George. Alan, please open the lines for questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Once again, everyone, that is star one if you'd like to ask a question over the phones. Please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star one to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Curry Baker with Guggenheim's – I'm sorry. We'll take our first question from Laura Martin with Needham.
Hi there, guys. Thanks for taking the question. I appreciate it. So this 10 to 20 million lower, based on it sounds like some of that is on the Saudi Arabia. Could you remind us what's going on in Saudi Arabia under the deal terms? Because I remember you sort of came up last quarter too, and why that's having such a big impact. And then also, George, could you talk about free cash flow lower by 100 million this year? Was that related to the working capital? And what's your free cash flow outlook for the rest of the year, please?
Yeah, so we just did an event on June 7th. That event was part of the 10-year agreement that we've signed. And Laura, what we're saying is right now in our forecast, which is what subtends our guidance is our internal forecast, we are assuming that we'll do a second event in the region and that we will also complete a media rights deal in the region. And if those two come to fruition, we believe we'll hit our $200 million. And what we're saying on the downside is if some combination, obviously it's not the ultimate downside case, but our best estimate of a downside case around either those developments not coming to fruition or the engagement not improving to the level we expect it to, we estimate the most likely downside at 10 to 20 million. On the free cash flow side in the quarter, because of the timing of the event and the accounts receivable, or our collection of that, because it happened so much later in the quarter. Last year, the MENA event happened on April 27th, so we collected in the second quarter, so we didn't have an outstanding AR at the end of the quarter. This time, we expect to collect in the third quarter, which is why you see that. So you'll see that reverse. While we don't give forward-looking free cash flow guidance, what we will say is we expect another 30 to 40 million in CapEx in the second half of the year, the reversal in the AR that I mentioned, and obviously because of the improved performance in the fourth quarter, we expect positive free cash flow year over year.
Super helpful. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
All right. Next, we'll go to Curry Baker with Guggenheim Securities.
Hey, thanks for the question. I have two. So first, on your $500 million share repurchase authorization, you weren't very active in the quarter. I think you did like $900,000. Can you maybe help us think about how you're thinking about repurchases in the back half of the year? Given where the share price is now, I would think you'd want to be opportunistic. And then I have one more on India. Thanks.
Yeah, Curry, I mean, we've said before, you know, to the extent we do repurchase, it's based on a variety of factors. First and foremost, we evaluate the intrinsic value of the business and its future cash flows. We apply a margin of safety. We also look at the liquidity and capital needs of the business, how we feel where the market's at, the regulatory requirements we have to comply with, and any other corporate considerations we have. So that's what goes into it. And in Q2, after valuing all that, we were in the market for about 12,000 shares, average price of 74, and like you said, about a million. And we'll continue to evaluate that into the back half of the year, and we'll act in what we feel will be a prudent manner. But we're not going to give any guidance on that.
Okay, thanks. And then on India, I know you can't really speak to the negotiations at this point, but could you maybe provide us with any incremental color you have just on how TV ratings there and AVOD consumption's tracking? And then also just on the market in India broadly, can you speak to the overall state of the pay television market there, as well as any specifics in terms of competitive dynamics and the demand for content, specifically WWE content in India? Thanks.
Yeah, Curry, I really don't want to get into characterizing, discussions that are ongoing, so I'm going to stay away from that. Our general belief is that over the next 10 years, the India media and entertainment sector is going to grow fairly significantly, and so our focus is how we deepen the brand over the long term. Vince mentioned localization and localized content. India is certainly at the top of the list potentially on doing that.
Okay, can you provide any just consumption data there, just in terms of what you're seeing, how consumption's tracking in the first half of the year? Is there anything you can
Well, like I
provide?
said, I don't want to start talking about our internal data and market just given where we are. I think there are reports out there on the India media and entertainment sector. I read one recently by EY. I think it came out in April or May. And you get a sense of who's consuming what's being consumed, and the long-term outlook, at least from EY's perspective. But ultimately, at this point, I don't really want to talk about our internal data, just given where we are in all these discussions.
Okay, understood. Thanks for the question, George.
Yeah, thanks, Curry.
We'll take our next question from Vasily Karasyov with Cannonball Research.
Thank you. Good morning. Since we're getting closer to Q4 in 2020, I was wondering if you could comment on this math. If I were trying to extrapolate from what's implied by Q4 for 2020, if I were just to take what's implied by your guidance, take out this MENA agreements and annualize that number and add Saudi Arabia events to that, would that be a decent back of the envelope approximation of what EBITDA should look like for 2020? And if I'm wrong, where am I going wrong here?
Yeah, Vasily, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to get into trying to architect the 2020 model on this call. When we're ready to talk about 2020 in the future, we'll give our view of that, but I'm uncomfortable getting into that right now.
Okay, but if I ask this question, Q4 is closer to the run rate of quarters. There will be no such pronounced seasonality quarter to quarter starting in 2020 because of the media rights deals kicking in. Would that be correct?
I think a lot of it will depend on how we choose to invest in the future, and it's something we're still evaluating. So, again, I don't want to start talking about how to best calculate 2020 or what's an applicable trend. So we're going to stay away from 2020 right now.
All right. Thank you very much.
We'll next go to David Karnovsky with J.P. Morgan.
Hi. Thank you. On the appointment of Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff as executive directors, can you just comment on why now was the right time for this move and just maybe expand a bit on what their responsibilities will be and how much latitude they'll be given in the process?
The why now question is a logical one. I can't, personally be in the weeds any longer, and we have these two individuals who have a longer range point of view and a developmental point of view. Both of these individuals have extensive backgrounds in, quote, the business from various aspects, and with the organizational aspects that they have and the depth of talent, executive talent, writing talent, which they now will attract. It's really going to be really good for our business. And from
okay.
the standpoint of how much latitude they will have, that's, again, it allows me to have a broader overview of things and an escape from just getting in the weeds. So, they'll have a lot of latitude.
Okay. And then just shifting a bit on the Saudi events, George, can you just clarify on what's actually reversing here? Does this mean that some revenue you thought that was coming in Q4 ended up being part of the Q2 event?
Yeah, something like that, David. We had made, again, our forecast is our guidance. We had made a forecast around what we thought the the event would generate, and there's a reversal of that. We're moving our original expectation for Q2 into Q4 and vice versa. So.
Okay, and just one more if I can. Regarding the Q3 outlook, I think back at Q4 earnings, you had stated that given the investment cadence, OIBDA would be potentially flat to down. Just trying to understand the change relative to today's guide and, you know, whether that potentially reflects a shift or maybe overall increase in your investment spend. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. Number one, some of the engagement metrics that we've seen, you know, trickle into Q3, so it's a little bit lower, we believe. And then there is an impact on the investment side, both some of the year-over-year lapping, as well as as I mentioned in the prepared remarks, we've made additional investments into our content creation, our digitization strategy, and our localization. So that we thought it was important to do now, and we've done that. So that's what's driving that change that you referenced.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes to the line of Eric Handler with MKM Partners.
Good morning. Thanks for the question. Wonder if you could talk a little bit about the WWE Network relaunch. How long will it take, do you think, before we start to see the tiered pricing? How long before we see some additional foreign languages being introduced or increased localization efforts?
Yeah, and I think the cadence will be the free tier first, which we're really excited about, the paid tier or premium tier second, and then our first additional language, we believe, after that. I think you'll start seeing things this year around that, and probably all three get done within the next 12 months or so, depending on how the rollout goes, but you'll begin to see those, our hope is, this year.
Great. And just as a follow-up, with regards to the international TV deals that are done, I know you don't want to talk, the economic value of those deals, but maybe you could talk about maybe some of the reasons why you went with BT and structurally, you know, some of the differences maybe based on the tiers that you're going to be on, or you know, just how it increases reach both in Latin America and the UK.
Yeah, look, ultimately we make our choices based on evaluating the market, evaluating potential partners, and coming to a conclusion on the balance between economics, reach, and engagement. And in all three cases, given the current market dynamics, we feel really good where we ended up. I don't want to talk about specific clauses in agreements, but I will say generally, across all three, we've been able to, from a scope of rights perspective, get more flexibility to what we think is reach more and diverse audiences, like Vince touched on in his remarks. So we're really excited about that. But I don't want to get into the specifics again because some of this is confidential.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
And once again, everyone, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question, star 2 to remove yourself from the queue if you find your question has already been asked. Your next question comes to the line of Ben Swinburne with Morgan Stanley.
Thanks. Good morning. I have two questions. There's been a lot of press written about the sort of state of the product or state of the content, big Variety article recently about some of the engagement and ratings trends. You guys sound pretty optimistic that you've turned the corner. And I know, George, you've caveated the guidance around continued improvement. I'm just wondering if you could spend a couple more minutes talking about how you see the state of storylines and the product on the screen currently relative to the past, you know, 2-3 quarters where it's been moving in the wrong direction, just to see if we can address some of the controversy that's out there. And then I just wanted to ask, following up on the network, do you think some of the network, the subscriber trends have been impacted by your transition in platform? In other words, I don't know if you've maybe had less product innovation or marketing behind it because you've been waiting to move off of BAMTech onto these new platforms, or if you just think it's more chalked up to the content cycle. Thank you.
As far as the content is concerned, I'll address that. We have definitely turned the corner. And again, as I mentioned, you know, we have executive directors with each brand now. They can go into more depth. I think that notwithstanding that, we have spent more time on storylines, good ones, and also talent development. It's a combination of a lot of things, all good things thus far, coming together in what I guess I'd call a relaunch in terms of our content.
And then, Ben, to your question on the network, I think it would be factually correct to say that as we've put our engineering resources over the last 12 months to design, in essence, create this new experience that we're rolling out now, that meant there was less time and resources to innovate on the what will be now the legacy platform. So you could argue that maybe that had some impact. However, from our perspective, we think the major impact was, you know, related to those engagement metrics. It didn't translate to the same level of year-over-year growth around WrestleMania that we've seen in the past. And, you know, just as you know, subscription businesses are driven by, you know, both the gross ad and the retention. And for us, our biggest gross ad moment, as you'd expect, is around WrestleMania. So when that doesn't perform, when it's down year-over-year, it has just the mathematical repercussions into the forward time period. So we think it was more of that, but to your point, and it's hard to parse it all out, there's no doubt all you'd have to do is look at iOS or Android version history and you'd see that we haven't done a lot of updates in the network for about 12 months because we have to make choices, we have limited resources, and those engineering resources have been really around creating and developing the new platform, which we're really excited about.
Great, that makes sense. Thanks.
Next we'll go to Marcy Rivicker with Wolfe Research.
Thanks. I have two clarification questions. First of all, I thought the issue was the buyback, that you had material non-information, public information related to all of the international deals, and that's why you couldn't buy back stock. So can you just talk about that? And then secondly, we're getting asked during the call about cost phasing, because I think everyone was expecting you to lap the big increases coming into the second half of the year. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't want to comment specifically on your question around MMPI. I'll say what I said around when I responded to Curry. You know, regulatory requirements are part of our evaluation on whether or not to execute within the buyback program. On the cost side, and I mentioned it before, earlier in the year we had expected that the overlap of 2018 investments, that the comp would get easier as we move through the year, third and fourth quarter, which it does. However, we've chosen to make some additional investments based on our view that it'll create more value than delaying them. So that's why you saw the Q3 change. It's something we've decided to do.
Got it. Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Eric Katz, also with Wolfe Research.
Hey guys, one housekeeping thing. As far as Q4 one-timers or non-recurrings, we have, I guess, the U.S. deal, the Saudi deal, and the Saudi event. Is there anything else that we should be aware of?
Well, the deal in China, the deal in Latin America have a year-over-year impact smaller than those, which is why we didn't call them out. And I just think generally the engagement trends and the impact that those that engagement have on the more transactional areas of our business, which includes our digital advertising or our consumer products businesses. So we didn't call out each independent line item, but if you think about the transactional sides of our business being more impacted by the day-to-day, that's why we need those engagement metrics to, at a minimum, stabilize or continue to improve to a point where they're back where they were, you know, first half of last year.
Okay, and then just coming back to the engagement a bit more, clearly you're addressing it head on with the big hires. Can you talk a little bit about the intended direction of the content going forward? Because if it's going to be a bit edgier, I'm just kind of curious how your partners feel, especially Fox, because the censors are probably a bit stricter for broadcast.
We're going to be a bit edgier, but still remain in the PG environment. We just haven't come anywhere close, actually, to going into another level. So that'll be something we'll do in terms of a direction of content, more controversy, better storylines, etc. But at the same time, we're not going to go back to the, quote, attitude era, and we're not going to do blood and guts and things of that nature, such as being done on perhaps a new potential competitor. We're just not going to go back to that gory, crap that we graduated from. And again, it's a more sophisticated product, again, attracting a much better writers and attracting, better management and things of that nature. So, I feel really good about it.
Okay, thanks. Maybe just one more. There are some rumors out there that there could be some more content coming to one of your partners. I know you can't discuss any negotiations, but just the rumor was that NXT could be something that comes to television. Is there a thought process on whether you'd rather keep that on the network or a scenario where that could come to television? Thank you.
Look, I think, I mean, we've said this before, we create 1,500 hours of content across a variety of different genres, including about over 300 in-ring content. And for every piece of content, we need to evaluate what's the best platform. It wasn't that long ago that if you wanted that content seen by someone, you had one choice. You had to find multiple partners around the world to reach any audience. Today, you can still do that. You can go direct and have it supported by advertising and reach half the world's population, or you can do it direct and have it supported through subscription advertising. So that's your question applies to everything, and we've got to always evaluate them. We're trading off things like economics, engagement, reach, reaching new audiences. So it applies to everything, including NXT. We're not going to talk about NXT specifically, but it's a constant discussion. It's probably what we spend the most amount of time internally talking about is what content to create and what's the best place for it.
Great, thank you.
Now we'll go to Alan Gould with Loop Capital.
Thank you. I've got two questions. First, can you give us some sense on how much promotion Fox is going to do once the programming goes there October 4th? I mean, I assume at least Thursday Night Football will promote Friday Night Wrestling, et cetera. And secondly, on India and Mideast, can you just give us some sense when those deals expire? I mean, I'm assuming they have not expired yet. I assume the content is still on the air in both markets. Thank you.
So I'll take the Fox question. As Vince mentioned, we're extremely excited about the opportunity to partner with Fox in terms of exactly what they're going to do. For any of you that have been watching NASCAR or any of the other broadcasts that Fox has been doing, they're already promoting SmackDown through integration into their current broadcast, so they're already doing that. What I will say is that will be dialed up significantly as we get into the month of September. As we've talked about in the past, they've put together one of the strongest promotional plans I've seen in my time in terms of leveraging their Thursday night football packages, what they have with baseball, again, what they do with NASCAR. So on their sports side, absolutely in every major sports broadcast that they have, WWE SmackDown will be promoted. In addition to that, they obviously have strong programming on the entertainment side, so it won't be exclusive to just Fox Sports. It will also be their entertainment programming as well. They're doing some really, besides just kind of the traditional promotion with a spot, if you will, they're also looking to integrate us into their programming organically, whether it's The Masked Singer or some of the other shows that they have coming out. So again, I'm not going to get into the specific detail around the economic value of what they're promoting, but suffice it to say that it is significant. And to Vince's point earlier, given the number of households they reach, which is 35% higher than what we do on USA Network, partnered with that level of promotion is the reason why we're really excited, coupled with where storyline is going, that we see this as a real opportunity come October.
At the same time, as far as promotion is concerned, we've been led to believe as well that NBCU is going to up their promotional efforts, and I don't know if they can equal or not Fox, but they too now are in a more of a competitive situation, obviously, and want to do much better with Raw.
And Alan, on the questions on in India, our current agreement expires at the end of this year. In the Middle East, our pay TV agreement has been terminated, but our free-to-air agreement continues to be in place. And as a reminder, YouTube, all of YouTube, has some of the highest per capita consumption in the world in that region. So we're pretty good at activating using the digital channel, so we continue to be pretty aggressive on that right now.
Thank you.
And one last time, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. We'll next go to Laura Martin with Needham.
Yeah, thanks again for taking the follow-up. So Vince, one of the things you said last quarter was that content, or that your storylines and your content and loss of talent was affecting ratings. And although ratings got better in the quarter, we still have negative comp in not only ratings, but live event attendance, and that's affecting consumer products. And you're like the best businessman I cover. And my question to you is, at what point do you decide that investing this extra money and hiring extra writers actually doesn't solve the problem because the problem is structurally shrinking ratings for the that linear platform and the fact there's just more competitors coming to entertainment programming over the top? So at what point do you stop spending extra money trying to get the ratings up because they actually can't go up? What metrics are you looking for?
As far as the competition is concerned, the old adage of competition is good for everyone, I think that's generally the case. Although, again, we're hoping that, you know, to the extent that they are competition, that they don't continue on with blood and guts and gory things that they have been doing, that would be bad. And I can't imagine that, you know, I can't speak for TNT, but I can't imagine they would put up with that. But nonetheless, as far as investment is concerned, you know, into the product and the content, you know, it's not one of these sizable type things. It's just a more of a restructuring and more of utilization. Yes, bringing in new faces, new blood who have different kinds of ideas and connections and so forth. So, again, it's just not one man's vision. You know, it's now a combination of what will happen in the future. So, again, I'm bullish on all of that. When you look at, you know, not just television ratings, but, you know, metrics, you know, from, you know, social and digital and what have you, that really is the new way of promoting, notwithstanding the fact that we are going to continue to build the motherships, as it were, you know, with Raw and SmackDown. So, again, from a investment standpoint, that's where you should obviously invest your dollars, but it's not sizable at all.
And Laura, the other thing I'd add to what Ben said is how we think about the opportunity and the size of the opportunity, because it's important, right? I mean, if you don't think there's enough upside, then it might change your perspective on investing. And you're right, we also believe there's going to be continued competition because there's going to be fragmentation, more and more content. Our belief right now is that if you have the scale to cut through the clutter, even if on an absolute basis you may be getting a slightly less share of the pie, but if you are cutting through the clutter, that you have an economic opportunity. And we continue to be in the U.S. one of the, you know, top deliverers of live eyeballs on a consistent basis, even with the declines. We're still in that in the top. In fact, other than the NFL, across broadcast and cable, we're in that next tier with the NBA and baseball, for example. We believe that content is going to continue to get more valuable because it will be harder and harder to cut through the clutter. And so we do think it makes sense to invest to maintain that position.
Thanks very much, guys. Very helpful. Thanks.
Alan, do we have any more questions on the line?
No, sir. We have no further questions.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate you listening to the call today. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Thank you.
That does conclude today's conference. We thank everyone again for their participation.